today. Thanks for checking out the show. Shout out to all the wrestlers, managers, and promoters in Australia. Need merch for your end-of-year wrestling shows? WrestleMerch Printing's end-of-year deal is here. Using the best quality premium AS color tees, all shirts are screen printed by hand using eco-friendly inks. Now, here's the deal. 30 tees, one color artwork, $395. 30 tees, two color artwork, $455. Or 30 tees with three color artwork, $530. This deal is for Australian pro wrestlers, managers, and promoters only, valid until the end of November. Postage charges apply for those outside of South Australia. Follow in the footsteps of TM61, Melbourne City Wrestling, Damian Slater, and us here at Wrestle Radio Australia. PM the Wrestle Merch Printing Facebook page for friendly, collaborative service, and be sure to tell them you heard about this awesome end of year deal on Wrestle Radio Australia.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back for season three in my newly revamped kitchen here in Glen Waverly, and I'm joined by the MCW Intercommonwealth Champion, the one, the only, Mr. Juicy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm the first episode of this season, aren't I?
You're the first person kicking off the maiden voyage of season three.
Well, the ship's going down quickly.
It is. Now, we've had, in the past, we had barbecue themes, we had the travel theme where I went to people. This season, it's the new crib.
I like it.
The new Castle Valles.
The iced tea theme. I think iced tea is the new gimmick for you.
Yeah, we've got iced tea, we've got coffee, we got all sorts of consumables, thanks to my wife, who's a doctor. Oh. I married up.
Smart.
Yes, so now I'm living the life of luxury in my podcast studio with you here in my living room, or my kitchen, excuse me.
I love it.
Yes, so.
The bum husband.
I got to be a house husband for a year. It was so awesome.
What did your husband do? Wrestle and podcast.
Yes, and they were so lucrative, both of them. And every day I would go to the gym and eat. It was great. It was such
a life.
Yeah, I raised a baby cat.
Good.
It was good times.
That's a good life.
So... we have faced each other once before.
Once.
It was...
not in a singles. Why would you?
No, it wasn't a singles.
No.
I believe I was intoxicated, so I don't remember much. You tell me.
Well, the match we were originally meant to do was a singles. And then we got placed into a six-man tag. As you do. Because that makes sense.
And I believe I was intoxicated that
night.
On a bender.
Yes.
My guy at OCW has struggled with substance abuse.
Correct. So that was your gimmick, and my gimmick was coming out to do a promo, and then you turned... you did a promo from the bar and called me out, and then we did some on-the-fly banter, which was good on the mic, got a few laughs, and then it turned into a match from there.
Which then involved sketch. Correct?
Yes.
That's right.
The number one, the king of Colac.
Sketch got a pin on OCW's version of Jim Leahy.
Yes.
And it went without a hitch. And we haven't met in combat since.
Why would you? Because it works, so we don't want anything that works.
I would be down to fight you at some point.
Absolutely.
What do you think would happen?
I think it would be a showcase of how good wrestling can be without two people touching each other.
Character.
Absolutely. I once wrestled Ryan Eagles for 30 minutes. 22 of those minutes we didn't touch, and that's not even an exaggeration. I can show you the video. The first 10 minutes was his promo, the second 10 minutes was mine. This is after the bell rang, and then it was 5 minutes of him avoiding me.
Excuse me. It's hay fever season here at Glen Waverly. Is that what draws you as let's go back 15, 20 years. Is that what stood out to you, the characters?
Absolutely. That's what you remember.
Talk about it.
You don't... when you talk about wrestling and someone says, oh, what did you like about wrestling? You don't go, oh, that one time Stone Cold suplexed someone. I remember that suplex. No, you don't. You remember what led up to that suplex. So you remember the storyline, you remember the promos, you remember the gimmick, you know, remember Stone Cold taking off his vest and punching The Rock. That was more important than the 10 moves that followed.
Yes.
But okay. In saying that, those 10 moves have to be crisp, clean, and make sense.
Yes.
They have to be... what's the word I'm looking for? They have to be there, but not memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a big spot mm-hmm. where you're like, awesome, I remember when... You know, but for example, one of the most memorable things of Austin is when Brett busted him up and Austin pulled himself up from the middle rope, covered in blood. You remember that.
It's a moment.
Yes. Wrestling is moments in my mind.
So would you think it's fair to say that if you create a character that people can either relate to for or against, and you put those characters in memorable moments, such as being covered in blood and pulling themselves up by the second rope, or, I don't know, on top of a semi-truck shooting everybody with beer.
Amazing.
People remember
yes.
those specific moments. So you, as a character, choose to portray and verbalize your art in that manner.
Yes.
Being a character Absolutely. Larger than life, and then that character be putting in situations.
Yes. For example, recently at MCW, I did Jonah Rock and I was the feud.
Yes.
The first thing he did was bottle me. Which hadn't been... I have not seen it before done in Australian wrestling. It may have been. I could be wrong. But
what is that exactly?
So it's when someone smashes a beer bottle over your head.
Oh, so, fuck me. Okay, yeah.
And that's what he did. Now, I don't need to tell you, but him and I are both workers, okay? But we had other workers come up to us and be like, did you guys use like a glass bottle?
That was my first mark question I wanted to ask you.
Now, come on.
I'm assuming there's a little baking going on here.
Absolutely.
But nonetheless.
Yeah. You get my point. Yes.
But that's created a moment.
We created a moment that people talked about. And then the next show, I speed him off the stage through the commentary table. People spoke about it. So when we touched, eventually, in the third payoff, people thought it was the greatest match. And not of the night. And not because we did anything spectacular, but we built to that moment. Now,
imagine.
I'm quite a basic, average wrestler. I can do things not overly well. Like, I don't do anything that stands out, but I can do things. But people remember that things I did because I only do them once or twice. I'm not doing 450s every night.
No, nor do you have to.
Yeah. And I understand some wrestlers feel they need to, but in my mind, you don't have to.
It's flavors of ice cream.
Absolutely.
I think the flavor of ice cream that you gravitate towards is very similar to mine, which is why I was so drunk during that six-man. I'm glad that happened that night.
It was perfect.
I think at some point I could very well meet you in the ring. There's, what, four or five promotions in town?
Mm-hmm.
We work at a few of them at the same time. So it's perceivable.
Yes.
And I think I'd whip your ass.
Okay. I like it. But we would create a moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what people would remember.
Mm-hmm.
Win, lose, whatever the circumstance, doesn't matter.
We could have a very basic fight. We could literally not do much, and people would be like, do you remember that match? It happened to me recently. I wrestled at MCW recently against Jack Jameson from the States.
Uh-huh.
And he's a lot like us, very character-driven. And we did not much, and people... The workers were like, ooh, that was an average match.
That was the wrist lock match?
Yeah.
That got over? I heard about it.
You get my point?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. We used him in the dark match for Warzone last week.
Yeah.
And I asked him to do the same thing. Work a body part and get it over, because every match that will follow will benefit from the fact that you established that early on. How refreshing. It's like the same... it's the same school of thought, same philosophy... So it becomes somewhat harmonious.
Wrestling is is theater as much as it is combat.
Okay.
We control our environment 100%.
Correct.
So,
and the parameters of that environment.
Yeah. So why do we forcibly try and make it difficult for ourselves? I remember going to a television studio... For it was either X Factor or Australia's Got Talent, they wanted to use wrestling as a thing. And they said to me, what can you bring that the other talents don't? And I pretty much said to them, we can do anything. I go, we can have a midget fighting a 7-foot guy. We can have tables on fire. We can have blood. We can have family-friendly environment. We can do whatever you want for your television show. And they were blown away by that because with talent, they pretty much go, what can you do? Oh, we're breakdancers. So that's all they do. Or, you know, what do you do? I juggle. Can you juggle like this? Oh, no, it's not really my thing. But we have the ability to probably have a guy juggling during a wrestling match if we wanted to. And people don't see that. They get caught up into their little sort of, well, that's all I do. You have to be versatile in wrestling. I need to be able to go, you need to get color tonight. And then the next show, you're going to go through thumbtacks. But you know what? Next week, you're wrestling in another state and you need to be the funny guy. You need to be able to do everything, in my mind. That's how I see a wrestler that's worth booking.
Do you think it's... well, I think the question answers itself, but based on what you just said. I agree 100% with it's the perception of what you're doing. At the end of the day, you're going to be asked to do different things in different circumstances for different people that are paying you.
Absolutely.
So to be versatile enough to do what they ask you to do is very much... something you need to be booked often.
I put it this way, and I've said this on a few podcasts before. A wrestler is a subcontractor, and the promoter is building a house. Now, if I'm a subcontractor and I go to a house, and that builder says to me, hey, I need you to do the tiles today, and you go, you know what, I don't really like tiles, I might paint, but the walls aren't up yet. He's going to be like, get the fuck out of this house, man. I don't need you today. You need to be able to do whatever the promoter wants. It's his money. It's his house. You got to do what he wants. You need to be that versatile subcontractor who can plaster walls and do the foundation. And, you know, the foundation is that first match.
Yes.
If I'm the first match, I'm not going out there to do fucking a superplex. That's not what the foundation's based around.
Working your spot.
Yes. Hard. I don't need to go 25 minutes to impress people. I need to just be my spot on the card. Because you're not always going to be the main event guy, unfortunately. But if you work well enough, the promoter goes, you know what? I can trust him in this spot to not fuck me over.
That's 100% what it is. Mm-hmm. It's reliability. So with that said, Do you compromise that in working for certain promoters? Would you overlook certain fundamental disagreements in the outlook of how you perceive the wrestling business to be?
I used to, probably when I first started. But for example, I was working at a promotion recently, and they had this idea for the finish of the match. And I was so against it. I'm like, this is a dumb idea. I don't want to do this. And I made it very, very clear to the promoter. I'm like, this is really silly. It makes no sense. No, it's going to be great. He's going to me. You don't understand. It's going to be great. The fans are going to love it. I'm like, okay. But just know I'm not for it. Went to a couple of different people and I said, this is their idea. And they're like, that's shit. I'm like, I know. But I'm doing as I'm told. The finish happened. Went over like a fucking lead balloon. Mm. Okay. And the crowd was like, what? And I went backstage and went, there you, that's what you wanted. And then the excuse was, oh, no, you didn't do it the way I said. Bullshit. I did exactly what they said. But it's not my money. You pay me to do a job.
How frustrating is that?
Very. Because it's my art. It's my creativity. But I also don't want to be the guy who is difficult. I have been difficult before. I'm still difficult today. But I want to be less difficult.
Yeah.
I'm known as the mutineer now amongst some promotions.
Really?
Yes.
You're the shit stirrer.
Yes.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. I'm just going to be straight out. Yeah.
Please.
And I'm not here to bury anyone. I'm just going to tell the story the way I saw it. I could be wrong. I could lose a booking out of this.
Listen, I'm going to do my best to exploit your story and also not get heat on myself for being the host.
This is completely my story.
There you go.
Completely nothing to do with you.
That's how much of a heel I am in real life.
It's my story, okay? But this is how I saw it. You know, it may cost me a booking, and okay. That's fair, but this is just the way I saw it, okay?
We're shooting straight in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Season 3.
To iced tea. The point is, I get booked for House of Hardcore through OCW.
Aha.
Right? Which is great. Great experience. There's going to be a lot of international guys there, but at the end of the day, they're wrestlers just like me. The only difference is they're from a different country. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean anything in my books. We're all wrestlers, right? We're all workers. We've all been trained, hopefully. You know, we're all trying to do our craft.
Yes.
So the card's pretty stacked, which is fair enough. It's the House of Hardcore show. It's not an Australian show, but 15 Australian guys get booked, right? Local talent get booked. That's a lot of talent. That's almost a whole card worth of talent. Then you got to add on top.
That's absolutely a whole card of talent.
Then you got to add on top the, you know, 5 to 10 internationals that are booked as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of people. There's 20 people on this card. I rock up to the show and we're pretty much told that the original plans of the booking aren't going ahead for whatever reason. There was a bit of a clash with the booking. That's fair enough. It happens, right? So I'm like, so what's the plan? And they're like, well, we've got too many local guys. And in my head, I'm like, no, you don't have too many local guys. You just have too many guys. We're all the same here, right? So they're trying to, they've got this piece of paper writing down all our names, trying to work out who was going who. And I'm like, you know what? This doesn't bother me. You've booked me, which you didn't have to. It doesn't bother me if you booked me or not. Come talk to me and say, hey, I've got no room for you tonight. Here's your fee because I have booked you. I'm sorry. And I'll be like, cool, pack my stuff, go grab Maccas and go home. It doesn't bother me. Okay. So the idea was to put the leftover local guys in a 8-man tag with 2 managers. So a manager each side. So we've got, well, I'm not very good at math. So
it's 11 people counting the referee.
Yeah. Okay. That's a lot of people.
Yes.
It's a lot of, actually, I think it was more. I would think it was a 6-man tag. Sorry, no, a 10-man tag.
That's even better.
I think there was 13 people plus the ref out there.
Wow.
That's amazing. A lot of people for a very small ring.
That's the same one that involved Vixen and...
Yep.
Okay, so yeah.
Now, right. to our credit of the local guys, that match was actually really good. Like, we all pulled out what we thought we needed to do, which is great. And it got over, which was fantastic. But the issue I had with it was I started whinging. Not whinging, I started speaking up. The reason being is I felt like I would be happier as a local talent to step out of that match and have, let's say, Dowie and JXT versus like Slade Mercer and Cadman. The reason being is I'd rather these 800 fans that are here, 600 of them which have never been to a local show before, I'd rather them see a really good local match and go, you know what, I'll come back and watch this, instead of what could have been a clusterfuck. So I'm like, why don't we put on our best talent? Why don't we put on the guys who are going to showcase what we can do instead of just chucking guys on a show? And I was pretty much told, you should just be grateful to be on the show because these international guys are here. I don't care. I've met international guys before. Yay for them. It's great. It's, oh, hi, Hurricane. Okay, cool. Okay, I'm at the Hurricane. It's not changed my life or what I do as a wrestler.
Stand back.
Yeah.
As a Hurricane.
But you get my point?
Your point. Here's my, here's the take I would look at, or the lens I look at it through. Mm. I agree with everything you've said.
Yeah.
But at the same time, certain business models run on the fact that Vince McMahon made this person a household name
yes.
at one point in time.
Yep.
So the value of the brand and the fact that there were 800 to 1,200 people in those seats was the fact that it was a House of Hardcore show
yes.
that featured so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so and so-and-so couldn't make it, so we brought so-and-so and so-and-so. Yep. Oh, and also Stand Back. There's a hurricane coming through.
Beautiful.
So it tried to over-deliver on the American storefront.
Yes.
With that said, perhaps there were promises made on the back end involving people that didn't have the ability to make to deliver on the promises that they were making to certain local guys. So it turned into a clusterfuck type situation.
Yes.
But I would contest that still, you would still have an opportunity to go out there for 10 minutes, granted, buried among 10 other competing agendas with people that are in that match themselves, plus 3 on the outside. But you could still create that moment, because at the end of the day, you could sell merchandise.
Which I did. I sold more merchandise than any of the internationals.
And knowing that, being corny, that was the point I was working back to, is you still, even though it was a clusterfuck situation, I felt for you being in that situation. The fact of the guys that were in that situation, I think, were in that situation because there was over-promising with the under-chance of delivering. Unless the intention the whole time was to deliver a 10-man.
Well, this is the thing. This is where the confusion is. Mind you, I sold $850 worth of T-shirts, more than any international sold that night. And that was me, a local guy.
Yeah.
But this is my problem. This is where the mix-up is, because I can hear what you're saying. This isn't about me not getting my moment. It was never about me. It was about protecting the local brand. It was about protecting wrestling in this country, because if that match had gone on and been a clusterfuck, thank God it wasn't, because there was talented in there, that people would have gone, why would I ever come back and watch local wrestling? We need those 800 fans to come back next show, not just because Tommy Dreamer's there.
I agree with you 100%. Mm. But the fact that guys like you and Slade Mercer were involved in that match, I think, made it a gamble worth taking from the promotion side.
Absolutely.
With the understanding that the promise has already been made that all you guys are working this show.
Yep. But I understand. I hear you out. But the reason I was getting upset, I could hear other workers... One other worker turned on me and was like, stop whinging, we should just be happy to be on the show. No, because this is why unions are important. I'm not saying it should be a wrestling union, but this is why unions exist. Because workers used to be like, you know what, I kind of don't want to stand on scaffolding 14 stories up and not have a harness. And then a worker will go, oh, you're just a whinger. And then that person falls over and dies. Mm. Right? The reason why we need to stick together and be like, well, hold on a second, I'd rather them see good Aussie wrestling than shit Aussie wrestling and come back and then buy more of my merch. Like, how good... Like,
but didn't that happen with Sid and Brooks and
that was amazing. Sid and Brooks were amazing.
There you go.
But that's what I'm saying. We didn't need that extra match.
You're right.
Don't promise things and be like, oh, and then say, oh, you should just be happy to be on the show because there's internationals. I don't care. I'm either on this show or I'm not.
I think I agree with you. I think if I were in your situation, I would have just been happy to sell the merch.
Yep.
You know what I mean? The fact that you guys were able to pull off a 10-man that was good and did make sense, and that's a testament to you guys as a unit, which further underlines the local guys. Sid and Brooksy were given
killed
an opportunity.
They killed it.
Because they needed a heel, and because Tommy already knows Brooksy.
Yep.
So that
great.
Trust is already there.
Fantastic.
You know what I mean?
I would honestly, if I said this to one of the promoters, I said, if you had to come up to me and said, hey, Dreamer's really keen on just having Sid and Brooksy as their only local match. I'm sorry. I would have been like, fair enough. That's how wrestling works.
Yeah.
I'm not here because I didn't get my 5 minutes with the international. I don't care. I don't care if you book me against Tommy Dreamer or not. I don't care if I'm on this show or not. Not because I don't want to be, but because I'd rather the best talent be on there. Not just because you promised some guys they're going to sit in the locker room with guys that used to be in WWE.
Would you, though, make the argument that the 10-man did have... To an extent, the best guys in that locker room that weren't already married to somebody else on that
absolutely.
Show for some other reason.
But the thing is, it was a gamble, and it was just lucky that it paid. To me, it felt like it was just like, I've made a promise for you, so I'm just going to all stick you guys in one match because I don't want to offend anyone. I'd rather be offended. I'd rather be told I can't put you on the show. Okay,
that's a tough spot to be in, though, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't make
I feel for
happy.
It. It would have been so tough. But my argument got muddled because they thought I was arguing about my own spot. I don't care. And a lot of the guys didn't. They just wanted to make sure that those 800 to 1,200 fans came back next show for the promoter, not for me. I don't make any extra money unless they buy my merch, which they did, luckily. But that's what I was trying to say. I'm trying to do the best for you. Because these people come to a show and go, oh, local wrestling's really good too. I'm going to come back.
I agree. It becomes tough because then there are competing interests. Like, for instance, I don't know the specifics of the deal, but I'm fairly certain that the interest of marketing House of Hardcore 15 from Melbourne as a House of Hardcore production, for them to be able to sell in the future, superseded those other interests.
I understand that completely. But what I'm saying is, if that's the case, then don't feel you need to book all these people to make them happy.
Yeah.
Just be like, hey, you know what? I need four local guys to have a couple of matches. These are the guys I'm sticking with, and that's it.
Well, I think in an ideal scenario... Okay, let's say... Let's play Monday Morning Quarterback.
Yep.
In an ideal scenario, you have six, say, former WWE stars that have name recognition.
Yep.
If it were... Let's say I know somebody who wins the lottery and decides to create a wrestling company, and this is how I'm advising him how to do it. I would take my six local guys. If I could have three heels, three baby faces that had worldwide exposure, that'd be perfect. I'd take my three baby faces, three heels, marry them to these guys, and hopefully get the rub from these international talents on my local guys. Because my local guys are going to be here every month, my internationals are only going to be here once a year, and it's going to be expensive, and there's a point in diminishing returns with them. Mm-hmm. Where if you've seen their act, you're not going to necessarily come back until there's a certain cooling off period that you don't really know.
Yep.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you want to make your local talent. That was the whole philosophy behind back in the day with NWA, and Flair mm-hmm. would come, and he'd come to Melbourne and work an hour with Mr. Juicy and go 59 minutes, 58 seconds, and then fuck you.
Yeah.
And then take off. And you looked like a bigger star to all the marks in Melbourne.
Yes.
Because you went toe-to-toe. And then he'd go to Adelaide and do it with Basso the next night.
Yes.
And then he'd go to Sydney and do it with Tyson Gibbs. And boom. And everybody benefits.
But that's wrestling.
Yes. But that's coming from the standpoint of two individuals who have been in the situation where we are forced to try to get ourselves over, and then we become over. So by doing that, and when I say that, I mean within a certain geographic territory where people who buy these tickets and are regulars to shows know who you are, and they are invested in your character. Knowing how to get to that point yourself is a big indicator of if you can get other people to that point. Yes. And once they're there, know how to do it. Now, what to do with it.
Yeah.
And then take it, and then at the same time, cook some other heel in the background and bring them up and then collide them together.
Easy.
Does that sound familiar, like anything that you deal with?
Absolutely. Absolutely it does. I won't mention it.
Because like for the House of Hardcore, for instance, the whole the predominance of the interest of the House of Hardcore 15 DVD production superseded the local wrestling.
Yes.
So there's no storylines involved.
Which I understand, but all I'm saying is don't feel you need to put yourself under the pressure of if you couldn't book local guys, then don't, is what I'm saying. Like, don't feel you're doing them a favour that they get to sit in the locker room.
Do you think that's just a lack of experience?
It could be anything, really. It could have been... It could have been wanting to please everyone, and I understand that.
In this specific
issue. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And I understand that pleasing everyone's really difficult to do, and I don't not appreciate that I was there, but it was just like, if you don't need me, I don't need to be here. Like, you... And then, like, obviously some things were said as well, and it was just... it just became a clusterfuck that didn't need to happen, where we could have just done... You know, if I had heard the tag match was JXT and, you know, Dowie versus Slade and, you know, Cadman, like I said before, I would have been like, all right, that was cool. That's their match. They did it. That's what they chose. Instead of having everyone on the show and then trying to work out what to do with them.
In a way to where it almost diluted you guys?
I don't think it... I think we all had our moments because we're smart enough to work that way. I don't think anyone meant to offend us either.
Yeah,
I just think it was overpromised and underdelivered when it could have just been like, hey, we are only using these four guys because these are the four guys Tommy has approved, and that's what we're going ahead with. And I would have been more satisfied than that than sitting there while the doors are open, not knowing what I'm doing and feeling like I'm in the way.
But at the same time, being a character and being able to adapt to these situations, which we did, still led you to the opportunity to sell $850 worth of merchandise.
But
that's awesome.
I sold it out of spite, though, because I wanted to prove a point. I wanted to prove a point that...
You should always sell it out of spite.
Yeah, I was more deserving to be on that show.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tough one.
It is. I don't hold grudges. I don't care. That I had the argument with that night, I will happily shake their hand and work for them every night. It doesn't bother me. I don't hold a grudge. But what happened is there was a confusion in what my argument was. The people who have now spread these rumors about me being the mutineer, right? It wasn't about my own spot. It was they thought I was getting upset that I didn't have a singles match. It doesn't bother me. The less bumping I have to do, the better.
Yeah, we subscribe to the same philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. What it was more, I just want Australian wrestling to have a chance. I want these 1,200 people to be here every week. It should be 1,200 people every month, and then when these House of Hardcore guys come out, it's 4,000 people.
Let's pretend like I win the lottery.
Yes.
Or somebody
like
I
your
know.
Fan that writes on your
yes.
face.
Let's pretend like Roy's successful. He wins the lottery. We start running shows in Australia. How? Give me a prescription to get to the promised land of what your vision is of getting that Australian wrestling.
I've always thought the same thing. I think the first thing to do is you need to buy a purpose set facility. You need a factory that you can deck out with parking.
Like PCW has, kind of?
Yes.
Okay.
You need that. You need, people need to go, that's where wrestling is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrestling here. That's what you need. Okay. You also need to now spend money on your talent. It has been the same match fee since I used to watch wrestling when I was 11 years old. There's a lot of happened. A lot's happened in 20 years. 18 years. You get my point? Like,
oh, I 100%.
How has money not gone up?
I've had conversations with folks about, instead of booking 26 people, maybe you could book 12 and pay them well.
Yep.
And perhaps they will be loyal to you.
Yes.
And then perhaps they won't take other bookings.
Yes.
That are $50.
Yes.
Because if I just got that much from you, I wouldn't work for anybody else.
I've recently worked out some deals with some promotions where I only do certain things and appear on their shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because they pay me more.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
That's business.
It's business. I'm here to make money.
Because none of them, at the end of the day, are going to pay for... It's not that big of a deal in this country.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, nobody's going to pay for my ACL replacement.
No.
Or my neck fusion.
Nope.
Unless I do it in a WWE ring.
At the end of the day, just because this is my art doesn't mean I have to be poor because of it. I deserve to be paid for what I do well. And that's... At the end of the day, I recently had... lunch with Bad Luck Farley from the Bullet Club, just to drop a name.
There you go.
And he goes to me, why are you in this business? And I said, because I want a nice house and I want to be famous. I want money. That's why I'm doing this. I'm selling t-shirts because I want to make, I don't want to work for a living.
Well, that is work.
I want to be a worker.
That's how you want to apply yourself.
Yes, I want this to be my full-time job. And that's going back to the argument that I had at the House of Hardcore show. The line got dropped. Well, this isn't your job. It's your hobby. And that's why, out of spite, I went and sold those t-shirts. Because I was proving a point that I could make my, you know, half my weekly wage at my real job in t-shirt sales.
That's what the Cardi and me would have done.
Yep. And that's what I did.
Taking the advantage, done the thing. Because that, in essence, is what working is.
Yes.
Don't undersell it, saying it's not real work.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's actually harder than real work.
This is my second job.
Yes.
The only reason it's not my first job is because I don't do it 5 days a week. I only do it two. But it's...
Well, there's no demand in this country. Well, not that there isn't demand, but I think under the right circumstances and the right marketing with the right budget, it could absolutely be done that way, but it would have to be run as a business.
Absolutely. The good thing is more wrestling companies are getting run as a business now. People want to make money from them.
Yeah.
Which is nice to see.
Absolutely.
But again, going back to the Test Lottery thing, if we want it, it has to be a purpose-built arena. That's the first thing, on a main road with a big sign at the front that says wrestling, because people go, fuck, wrestling's back, because they think it's disappeared. They think it disappeared 20
Reception
years ago.
Perception is reality.
Absolutely. The amount of people I say, oh, I do wrestling, like, where do you do that? And you're like, come on. Or they bring back that show, I don't know if you ever caught it, the Gorilla Position.
No.
Okay, some people decide to do a show called the Gorilla Position on Channel 31 before OCW stepped in and took it up?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
NAW.
No, it wasn't even NAW. It was their own promotion.
Oh.
But they
I see George on an episode?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I've seen it.
It's horrendous.
Yeah, Ben Gilbert showed it to me.
Okay, this is my problem with that show. We had someone from Channel 9 that we spoke to about possibly coming down and watching. Now, obviously, we weren't going to end up on Channel 9, but this is when Channel 9 was bringing out Go and 9 Gem. So, different channels that needed
content. What was the promotion?
It was MCW. So, it was MCW when they, like, not first started, but when I first came back to them. And this guy from Channel 9 was sort of interested, and we spoke to him, and he goes, nah. And we said, why? He goes, I saw your stuff on Channel 31. And we said, no, that's not us. That's the Gorilla Position. He goes, I'm not touching this. And I messaged the guy that ran the Gorilla Position and said that to him. And his response was, I don't believe that because what we put on Channel 31 is good, if not better, than what's on Raw.
What an excellent answer.
I was in shock. I couldn't believe that was his legitimate, like, answer. Like, what are you thinking? Like, how do you think that's the case? Now, we later found out this person wasn't... He was on the spectrum a little bit. So, he obviously...
The person who created the content or the person who was the decision-maker at Channel 9?
No, the person who was that created the content of the Gorilla Position.
That makes sense.
Wasn't probably... I wouldn't say... Whatever. He just believed it. He honestly believed it. that he was producing Vince McMahon quality stuff.
He was a babyface in the situation.
But if you ever watched it...
Oh, I saw it.
When there's a drawing of a gorilla...
Yeah.
Being... like, from clip art.
It's pretty good. Why didn't you guys... Okay, here's where my lottery winner comes into play. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you guys cut up a sizzle reel?
We did. And we sent it, and they wanted to put us on Australia's Got Talent as a start. So what the gimmick was going to be, we go on Australia's Got Talent. That's the buzz to see if people are like, ooh, wrestling, and then eventually lead to something. We got to Australia's Got Talent, the producers, we met with them. It was me and Bass, out of all people. Me and Bass went there, we showed them this video, and I was like, this is amazing. This is when we had the chat of, we can give you anything.
Midgets. What two characters for them to meet?
Yeah, exactly, me and Bass.
You and Bass. Okay,
fair enough. They were like, yep, I wore really high boots, so I looked tall, at least in a tight t-shirt. You know, you got to look the gimmick, because you don't want them to be like, oh, you're a wrestler? Like, you want to look like one. Which I'll come back to later. So we did all that, and they're like, yep, we're keen. Then they emailed us, and they're like, how long will it take to set up a ring? And we said, 40 minutes, half an hour. And they were like, too long. They didn't want it on the show.
No, fuck.
They didn't want to take that much time up. They didn't want to take an hour up of setup in a day where they have to pay per hour for production shooting.
Like, no, it's cool. We'll get some of the boys from the school to come and set it up for free.
Yep.
We'll just put it on a separate part of the stage.
That's what we said. We were going to do it in a shed, a separate shed. They're like, yep, cool. And then I'll just like, out. And if you ever dealt with TV execs, that's what they are. They are like, yes, we're 100%. No, we're out.
Yeah. No, I've unfortunately had my fair share of experiences. Wow. So, fuck. Well, that kind of frames it. Oh, I was of the opinion that if you could put together a sizzle reel and you had the facility and you had market research behind it of this many people will attend these kind of events, you could perhaps convince somebody who was predisposed to saying yes because either they were a fan at some point or they know somebody who's a fan or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
If all those things came together, you could turn it into a money-making regular enterprise. Weekly towns.
Yeah, the way we've spoken to more TV producers, so have I, because as I said, I want to make money from this, and being on TV will make me money. What they want now is they want you to put up the money ahead of time, which is close to 100 grand. They want you to put up front. Then you film a 12-episode series that has to be done with their camera crew and all that, so then you're going to pay all them, right, at your facility, so you're paying for the facility as well. Then you're going to remember... when you have an audience, they can't pay to be on TV, so you have to give away the free tickets for the audience to come, so you're not making money from that either. Then you give them the 12 episodes and they will air it if they think it's good enough, and then if that's successful, then they will pay for a season 2. That's the current deal if you want to end up on 9 Go or 7 Mate or whatever.
Fuck me, no wonder
you put up money, 100 grand up front, then you tape a 12.
What's 100 grand cover?
Airtime.
The cost, the airtime. What you're telling me is you have to buy airtime
for the first season.
In order to have a commercial,
which
is the first season, 12 episodes.
Yes.
Okay. So theoretically, if it's a low budget production, like a professional wrestling show, even with moderate to good production values, let's say an MCW.
Yep.
In the grand scheme of things, it's not like a fucking episode of Game of Thrones.
No.
Cost wise, it's very relatively cheap.
Yes.
So, you have that. You have to give them 100 grand to get the airtime for a season 1. And then, if season 1 is successful in terms of demographics, they pay you for season 2.
Now, when I say season 1, I'm not talking 6 o'clock on a Friday night. I'm talking midnight on a Sunday. Like, we're talking bad time. So, you got to do something to get people to watch late night television on a Sunday in the hope they fucking watch it.
Do they keep track of DVR?
I don't know. We haven't gone back. But I'm assuming yes.
Because if they did, I could see it being foreseeable. Look, if Ring of Honor aired at 2 o'clock in the morning, hardcore wrestling fans would DVR it.
Yes.
That's just the way it is. Yeah. In some New York markets, it airs weird hours.
Mm-hmm.
So it could potentially become... So outside of that, because if you do have that kind of television exposure, then you can start running in multiple towns, blah, 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 blah.
Absolutely.
Take away that as a precondition. Do you think it's possible?
If someone has the money to lose. If someone had millions that they did not care about, if they ran a company that they'll be happy to write off from tax.
Like a lottery winner.
Yep. If there was a lottery winner, then absolutely could work. Because you'd pay the talent who would only appear on that show. You wouldn't care that all the tickets were free. Because you don't need to make money. If you're willing to start a small business and lose money for the first year, then yes. But fuck, you need to pay for some good talent. You cannot have kids wrestling on your show.
Do you think that the deal that was laid out to you in terms of pay for the first season yourself was because it was you and Bass?
No, this came from someone else. This was another time. This was after the Australian Got Talent thing got axed.
So let's pretend like you had some kind of relationship with one of these people that was outside of the norm.
Yeah.
You weren't just some mark showing up with an idea. Do you think it's the same deal across the board?
I think so.
Or do you think because it's pro wrestling and there's a certain stereotype thanks to the position?
I think that probably doesn't help. I think they're scared because pro wrestling is not what it used to be in their mind.
Well, the good news is there's a lot more people that win the lottery around 100, 150 grand, 200 grand.
Are they going to spend it all?
Potentially.
Can't see it happening.
I think if Roy Medley won $300,000 US, we could turn that into what, $450,000?
But here's the problem. This is the issue. Okay, so that happens. Cool.
We'll buy me a house to be the audience, to be the office of the company.
I love it. So this is the problem. A mark wins the money.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we have wrestlers on there who you would question being on there. You know who we need to have on there? We need to have the Elliot Sextons, the Cadmans, the Cousin Arleys, the Dowies, the Jakesies, the guys that look like wrestlers.
The cream of the crop of the area.
Yes. The best. We need people that people go, he's a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Elliot Sexton. He's 6'4" and jacked to the shit.
Yeah, he's big as fuck.
Look at Jonah Rock. These guys are larger than life. You need people to be like, I get that. You're a wrestler.
It helps to have some normal-sized people who are characters.
Yeah, of course.
Like, case in point, in Edwin.
Yes, absolutely. Because
he makes Elliot Sexton look like a huge fucking monster.
That's right, but that's wrestling. I'm talking about having your top guys, though.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Even Maniac. Maniac's not the best wrestler, but look at him. He's humongous. Wayne Mattire.
Oh, the Bullet Club guy.
Yeah.
Well, he looks like a fucking... If I saw him on my television screen, I'd be like, what a fucking gimmick.
Yep.
And I'd keep watching. Whether he was chopping wood or wrestling somebody or whatever.
He wouldn't have to wrestle. He would do a big boot and a choke slam.
Exactly.
And have a manager that spoke for him.
Absolutely. So what you're saying is present something that's a credible product in a good time slot on a network that has access to a lot of people.
Yep.
And then based on that, you believe that you could make money in this territory being Australian content.
Yes.
I think I agree with 99.9% what you're saying. excuse me. Don't edit that out. I understand you do business with WrestleMerch Printing.
Yes, I do.
Now, they sponsor this podcast.
Yes.
I don't know if you're aware of that. They also sponsor the Wrestle Radio Australia family of podcasts, to include Josh Shooter's The Axe Cast.
Yeah.
Don't know if you've been on that before or not.
Haven't been asked to, no.
Okay, so... there's also the various shows that Josh is involved in. The show with no name. There's the Drawing Heat podcast.
I'm Drawing Heat. Yeah.
There's a whole family of us Mark podcasts that advertise for WrestleMerch Printing, and none of us actually use their services. Okay, I don't know these guys ever. I've never interacted with them. I just put them over every time I do a podcast.
Good.
You, on the other hand,
have
done business with WrestleMerch Printing, and I always use you as an example in the copy that they send me that I usually butcher about the fact that you do merchandise through them. So tell me about your Wrestle Merch Printing experience.
They are the best. Honestly, I deal with Tom Chocolate a lot, who runs it.
Okay.
And he is fantastic to deal with. I am such a pain in the ass when it comes to what I want. And he will sit there and be like, how about this? How about this? He will have ideas before I do. He will come up with... He will see something, put it in his back pocket, and then when I message him and be like, hey, I need a new t-shirt, he'll be like, I saw this. And that's rare to find.
So he's a proactive marketer.
Absolutely. Where other people I've dealt with t-shirts will go to me, what do you want? And I'll be like, I don't know. And they'll be like, what about just you? And it's like, no, I need... And they just give up. where he's like, this, what if I change this color? Hold on, I think I got this. Bang. Yes, that's the t-shirt I want.
So you would recommend getting your merch?
Every day of my life, I would recommend Tom Chocolate. Absolutely.
You do move a lot of merchandise.
Yeah, absolutely I do.
So I'm sure you've used them quite often. They've always been reliable on shipping?
Absolutely. Everything. And great price.
Well, there you go.
If you want something unique, I mean, you're right. I could go to Redbubble or to a Chinese distributor and be like, print me 1,000 t-shirts that just say Mr. Juicy on them.
Yeah.
And that would sell. But if I want something that looks good, because what makes money now is t-shirts that don't look like wrestling t-shirts.
Yeah.
That's what JXT does, and he makes a killing.
So what you're telling me is that they at WrestleMerch Printing design it for you. You yep. approve it.
Yep.
And then they ship it to you.
Absolutely.
And then you sell it.
Yes.
At a nice profit margin.
Absolutely, because I'm here to make money.
So, they're an asset to you.
Yes.
Well, fuck them anyway. So, what's on the horizon for Mr. Juicy?
I'm tired. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
I'm working 2 to 3 times a week, which I know for people overseas isn't much, but for here is a lot.
Fair enough.
I'm doing double duty one night and then a double duty the next night. I'm doing state after state. And it's all for my own ego, because no one's ever said, geez, you work a lot, and that's all I want. I just want someone to be like, fuck, Juicy gets booked a lot.
Geez, you work
a lot. It's funny, every time I say that, everyone says the same yeah. thing. I just want the recognition that I wrestle a lot, and I don't ever get it, and it hurts me.
Well, I think it's fairly obvious. I mean, you seem to go a lot of places. You go to EPW on a regular, somewhat regular
EPW basis. Perth, Wrestle Rampage Adelaide, there MCW and OCW here, Platinum every now and then, PWA in Sydney, IWA in Sydney, recently done Brisbane again. My aim is to do every state in 1 year.
Well, that's Tasmania.
That's the only promotion I haven't worked
on. You haven't cracked him yet.
The reason being, we don't come to a financial deal.
No, I understand.
Yep.
Not to reveal the inner workings of the wrestling no. business, but that is very important.
Absolutely.
And there are certain guarantees as an independent contractor you need. Believe yeah. me, I understand
completely. I don't need it to cost me money.
No, I agree with you. I'm in this to make money too, believe yeah. it or not, even though I don't sell merchandise. but I think it's a good sign if you're busy.
Oh, it is. It's great, but I'm hurt. This is the problem. Not injured, hurt. As you would know the difference. If you're injured, you stay home. If you're hurt, you just shut up and do it.
Hurt is like an accumulation of bumps and bruises. Nothing
well,
career life threatening, but might become aggravating over time.
The ligament that connects my hamstring to my knee is torn and needs surgery.
Okay, that's
my rotator cuff is sprained and needs rest.
Which one?
My right one.
Okay.
So, which is good because I work the left. It'll be fine. My right ankle is completely just down to the bone, so just rubs.
Do you wear boots?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's what saves me from rolling my ankle. If I wear thongs or something, I'll roll my ankle even just walking.
Yeah.
And it hurts like a motherfucker. That's where I'm at the moment. So I need time off, but I'm very scared to take it. My fear is I take it and everyone forgets me.
I don't think that's going to happen.
It can. I'm not very well liked, despite what you think.
Is it because of having strong opinions? Because
possibly,
you know, I would fall in that category.
There's two reasons, and it was funny. I was thinking about this on the way here, if I was going to speak about it or not. But when I first retired, because I retired 5 years ago,
fair enough,
for like a whole year. When I retired, I guess the reason being was there was someone who doesn't like me at all. Doesn't like a lot of people, but for some reason I rubbed them up the wrong way. So their way of getting to me was pretty much going to people and being like, did you hear what Juicy said about you? Did you hear? And now, I'm not one to talk about anyone because I don't really care for it. But people believe this person and they turned and I wasn't really well liked. And some of that still happens. There's a lot of promotions I don't get booked at because of that reasoning. And it happens. Whatever. I can't change it. I've learned to live with it as an adult. I'm not 16 anymore that I'm like, oh, this person's talking about me. If they really want to, that's up to them. But yeah, I'm not really well liked. So my fear is the people that do like me now, if I leave, will forget that they like me, which is just my own paranoia.
But don't you think there becomes a magic number of saturation where then you can fuck off for a little while?
I'm hoping so.
Come back and still capitalize on that.
I'm hoping so.
There's a window.
Yeah. And I'm really hoping this window comes up because I need a bit of time away.
It would do you good.
To get fixed.
Yes. It would do you good, I think.
Yeah.
It's surgery for any of this stuff?
Yeah. The tear.
The hamstring?
Yep.
How long of a shelf life is that?
3 months.
When are you in line for the surgery now?
I haven't gone that far because I don't know when I want to do it.
Because there's still a wait period, right?
Absolutely. Because I'm not in the private system, I'm in the public system. Which here is still better than any other public system you are accustomed to.
That's true, yeah.
I'm not paying $8,000 for it.
Can you imagine wrestling for 9 years without health insurance?
How? Why? Why do you guys do it?
We're fucking stupid. That's why. And because we love it and we're passionate.
Yeah, but it just, it blows my mind that the American health system is like that. I just don't get it.
It's, yeah, it's viewed as a commodity, not a right.
It's insane.
It's You're changed a human. Now. It's changed now with Obamacare.
But is that going to hang around if Trump gets in?
Trump's not going to win. The Vegas odds on Clinton are 85%.
Okay.
And that's real gambling. So, you know, I'm going to go with that. But the problem is that it was viewed as a commodity and was regulated as such. So because of it, the cream of the crop got the best medical attention in the world. Didn't have to wait for it. But the vast majority of people, like independent contractors, like pro wrestlers, didn't have coverage.
Yeah.
So there were countless times where I split my lip or I split my eye or something like that, and I didn't have health care. So they would send me like a $3,000 bill for a 20-minute emergency room visit for 7 stitches. That's how it worked, and that's what went with the job, because in order to be flexible enough to be available when the office calls you and says, we need you to make this loop in the middle of the country, that you can go.
Yep.
The only jobs that you can really do that on the side are waiting tables and personal training.
Yep.
Those jobs typically don't have health insurance because it's a employer-employee basis there as opposed to a government-citizen relationship.
Yep.
It's amazing here. Once I got here, I've been to the doctor here more in the last year and a half than I went in the last 15 years combined.
Yep.
Because after I got out of the military, it was like, why? I'm healthy. I don't. I got sick maybe once. I got double pink eye and it got into my sinuses. It was all fucked up. Yeah.
But this is the thing. The argument that came with our last election was people were like, oh, who cares if you have to pay a $5 levy to see a doctor? That's how it starts. Because the poorest people can't afford that $5 levy. And when that $5 levy becomes a $20 levy and a $50 levy, it affects all of us.
Yeah, no, I understand the argument. Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not fluent enough in this system. I just know that the system that we had in the United States didn't work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And under Obamacare, it was more expensive for me to not get health insurance because I would face that tax levy at the end of the financial year than if I had the health insurance. And with the health insurance, and coincidentally, you get it in January, and it's for the entire year. In 2015, I knew that I was moving here in April, so I let my coverage lapse. Mm-hmm. 2 months later, I get busted open by this big 6'5" jacked guy in his first match ever.
Of course.
Dan Matha from NXT recent fame. He split my chin open in 7 stitches, $3,000 bill. Because I didn't have Obamacare.
Yeah.
Whereas if I had Obamacare, I would have still paid $200.
But
and then the government or whoever my insurance company was. But it's all stupid because there it's like insurance companies can't compete over state.
Yeah.
So that becomes a nightmare for us because I'm wrestling. In 2009, my typical week was like 1 day in Indiana, 1 day in Ohio, 1 day in Tennessee, 1 day in Kentucky.
Yeah.
You're working a loop. So then that becomes a nightmare insurance-wise. What happens if you tear your rotator cuff, tear your ACL?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to work carny, and luckily I was the right ethnicity where I didn't have to do anything, and I got the heat.
Easy.
So it worked out for me. But not later on when I did start getting injured because I didn't have the easy Arab heat anymore. I was in a higher position on the card, so you had to do more. Yeah, and it was real. It was for me, I was always making those sacrifices knowing that my bigger payoff would come in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be as a talent or whether it be behind the camera or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
I viewed that 10 years as my college and practical experience. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, with that experience, I can question you on your own podcast.
Yes.
What does the local scene here need to either go to that next level or survive another 10 years?
I think on its own, it will survive.
Mm.
It will always survive. I'm not privy to financial information concerning most of the promotions.
Yep.
So I don't know their financial health and if that's a guiding factor in whether they continue to do business or not.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is that I think what would be ideal is if you had something similar to what you described as one recognized central location that could almost serve as a feeder system.
Yes.
Imagine I won $20 million. Mm-hmm. I would create my own warehouse, or I would probably buy one.
Yep.
Somewhere that was accessible by mass transit. And one day a week, I would tape television out of that same building.
Mm-hmm.
And the other days of the week, I would have training classes
yes. with
guys that knew how to work, and then also guys that knew how to do pretty spots, and guys that knew how to do this, all facets. My own mini performance center, if yes, you will.
Absolutely.
So that I could attract anybody who is serious about this industry from around the continent and maybe even Asia to come to this place as a bridge to get where they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important things you need is the financial resources to do that, but nonetheless, you also need practical experience of having been in the system and also knowing people to contact and
yep.
common pitfalls. To where you can see a kid who's 21 now who has a lot of promise, but you know he's got to break this habit because this will bite him in the ass down the line or something to that effect. If that plus the financing can come together along with the talent's willingness to work for the territory and understanding that the territory's success will result in their own collective success as opposed to looking at themselves 100% in their favor in all matters, I think it could work.
Absolutely.
Because from that, you could then, with the resources covered, create that season one pilot.
Yep.
And then lead to greater success to where if you get that television exposure, now I can run shows theoretically 4 or 5 days a week in hick towns where nothing else is going on.
Yep.
They get our television show, so they know who Mr. Juicy is. They know who Elliot Sexton is. So when he comes to the high school in the middle of the day, it's kind of a half-assed big deal. If nothing else, the kids are glad to get out of class.
Yep.
And they have an event to go to that night that's exclusive for their town. And you and fucking Sexton can pull the same 15 minutes that you pulled on the other side of the fucking stage.
Which we do already.
The day before. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the system that I came from.
Yeah.
That's what I would create here. And from that, the talent here over the long term, if they're working a weekly television show, over time they learn how to keep their time cues, how to work towards hard camera, how to accentuate and take away from mm-hmm. the crowd so that they will learn how to work on the fly so they can do it when they get out the opportunity to do it on Monday Night Raw.
Yes.
Period. It's Absolutely. Training ground for the bigger picture because yes. that's exactly how the smaller territories, the OVWs are run. It's the same system.
Mm-hmm.
If you master that system when there's minor stakes, you're better prepared to play the real game when there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on the line.
Yep.
Never mind the fact that once you're done with the company, you're set for another 5-10 years based on that name recognition of getting that average run, which lasts about 2 years.
Yep. Spot on.
And today, it's even different because now NXT, back in the day, developmental was ignored and hidden.
Yep.
It was not acknowledged other than inside ribs, like with the Spirit Squad.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, now it's promoted. Now it's on the network.
It's its own show.
The playing field has dramatically shifted into the talent's favor. Whereas 10 years ago, it was very much one place to work, seriously work, and make money. And you were at the mercy of the company. And now the company is hiring all sorts of guys.
Yes.
Even if it's on a per contract basis. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but you, Mr. Juicy, would benefit here in this scene if you had the opportunity to go up there and do 5 minutes with Braun Strowman,
for Absolutely. Instance. Yep.
Because then that would translate to more net recognition for your brand here on a local basis.
Yes.
You're perceived as a bigger deal because of your rub from there.
Absolutely.
You can create the same system here if you had the resources you dedicated it to.
Yep.
And even if you have the resources you dedicated it to, it still has to be guided by somebody who knows what the fuck they're doing.
But
and good luck.
But this is a problem. For the last 20 years, we've been saying this and nothing's changed. Things have gotten better. The world's a lot smaller with the internet. But for local promotions, it's the same thing. And this is the problem. It's the same thing that was 15 years ago. 15 years ago, when I used to watch local wrestling, there was 1,500 people in a small Macedonian hall in Epping. watching Psycho Kid Thunder and Jim Demiroff repeat what Stone Cold and Vince did on Raw the night before. And everyone went, amazing. Like, I just don't get it.
So, what was the difference between then and now? Did they have a television show on air local here? How did people know about wrestling? Was it the marketing?
No, what was different was Channel 10, which was the free-to-air channel, played Monday Night Raw on Saturday for some reason, and everyone watched it. Saturday night, you went home, and you watched wrestling at 10 p.m., and it was popular. Just like how poker got popular here in this country. Because what was happening? Saturday night, 10 o'clock, poker was on. And all of a sudden, everyone was a poker player. I've had a gambling problem since I was 16. I used to go to the Crown Casino at 16 years old and sneak in to play poker. There was one table. There is now a whole fucking hall of poker tables because late night television, poker was on. Everyone's like, oh, I play poker, I'm a poker star.
So did the local wrestling advertise during the 10 p.m. slot?
No, but wrestling was everything. Everyone wanted to be a wrestler. So they would just put in a newspaper ad and everyone would be like, fuck, wrestling is local. Let's go.
Back when newspaper ads were relevant.
Yes.
So do you think, okay, so then that, let's go full circle. Back to how to make a living in promoting this business. If the same relevant to today's market channels were used to place those advertisements, because back in 2001, mm-hmm. a newspaper advertisement was fairly expensive.
Yes.
But it had far more reach than it does today.
Yes.
What's relevant today? Some would argue Facebook. If you devoted, say, thousands of dollars to targeted advertisement through Facebook, do you think you could raise awareness enough?
Some awareness, but the thing is, Facebook is oversaturated with things that people are like, I don't care. They skim past sponsored posts. People don't go, oh, I can buy a fucking mop that mops itself. They don't give a shit.
But, okay, because that's a mop that mops itself.
Yeah.
But, like, what happens with me is I'll be scrolling through my newsfeed, and all of a sudden I'll see a poster that has Andy Phoenix on it, for instance. This is a real-life example.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, oh, what the fuck's this? And then it's a show that I'm on.
Yeah.
But it's a sponsored feed. And the only reason I know it's a sponsored feed is because I took enough interest to stop and look at it and then realize it was a sponsored feed.
Because they got the right person on the poster. They don't have someone that looks like a kid.
The right circum... Yes, you're right. But it goes back to that same conversation we had earlier about a guy like Wayne the Maniac catching...
If he was on a poster and I didn't know what local wrestling was, I'd be like, holy shit, this guy's a giant.
Or a guy like a JXT, where you could see a 19-year-old girl would probably blow him in the backseat of a car, so she might be inclined to go pay $15 to see him wrestle.
But he's...
Sketch.
Here's the thing. These are my... I'll bring up one thing and I'll bring up another. If you want to know who's killing it in promotion at the moment, Newcastle Pro Wrestling.
They do have great houses.
They kill it because they invested money in advertisements at their local shopping centres, big posters with jacked up guys on it and girls on it who are quite good looking. They do, before the Batman the Killing Joke movie came out, when the Killing Joke movie was out, they all went and they played their ad before the Killing Joke movie. So you got comic book fans sitting there watching a wrestling ad before a movie. So before ads, so they've got their dates set for the year. So they play an ad that's the same every fucking movie with all their dates and people go, oh, that's at the Central Coast Leagues Club on this date. And they go, fuck, I know where that is. I'm going to go.
And they're showing body guys like Bonza and
machines,
whoever the fuck.
And you go, that's wrestling. That's great. Of course, like, this is what I... whoever has your belt in your company, whoever's got the prop, needs to be a guy you can put on a poster and people go, yeah, I want to see that guy. That guy's my champion. I get it.
Larger than life.
Yes.
Or a character that's larger than life.
Yes.
So why isn't that happening?
Because I feel promoters feel obliged to either put the belt on someone they think deserves it, which is, I know people deserve a prop, but
but it's a prop.
Yes, but this is the thing. In our local scene, some of our guys get so worked up. I'm one of them. I used to get worked up that I hadn't held a singles title in 9 years, right? But now I get it, that it doesn't really change anything.
Yeah.
I can still be the mid-card guy.
Your guy was over.
Yeah. And that's all it has to be.
From my third party perspective, who didn't know anything walking in.
Yep.
For the first few times.
It's easy. Like, it just does my head in sometimes. I just think there's a real muddled message within promoters and workers getting upset that they don't have... It's a lot of pride and ego and...
But it comes back to that mentality of looking out for yourself and being centrist in your view of what benefits me and I don't give a fuck about what benefits you.
Yep.
Or that other outlook. Like, I think I'm a good heel because I do the other outlook. And I figured out a long time ago that I wasn't a genetic freak. So if my shit, if getting my shit was making you look good, no matter who you were or what you did, then I would always be able to get my shit in.
Yeah.
Because I'm making the other guy.
Absolutely.
And then I become a reliable hand.
Yes.
That was always my strategy outlook, and I became what would be called the carpenter in the business because that's what I did.
Well, this is the problem. Some independent wrestlers want to be the top dog when they don't know that their position isn't that guy. They're like, but I should be...
That's a human resources issue.
I will literally put over Elliot Sexton every night without a problem. Happily. Nothing. There'll be no reason why I would job every night of the week.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly. But this is the thing. There's people that wouldn't. There's people who be like, oh, why am I always jobbing? Who cares? You're both getting paid. Unless he's getting paid more than me for going over, why should I care? And then the one time I do go over, it'll be amazing. And everyone will be like, oh, he finally got over. And then let's start it again. Start that role all over again.
But does that happen? Look.
No, it doesn't.
I had a little bit of a stretch where I was writing a specific show in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had anybody say, no, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
But maybe it's different because I come from, even though nobody knew me, I was still what I would consider one of the boys because I had done my time in the business. And yep. I think everybody knew that.
Yep.
So, and I was also saying, I want you to do this tonight because we're going to do this in 2 months. And
then if it's explained, absolutely.
So that's why I need you to go home at 9 minutes, 59 minutes
yes.
seconds with this hold.
Yes.
And the ones who did that to a T were the ones where I was like, oh, I can fucking rely on
yes.
it. Back to the illusion that you gave, or the story that you gave at the very beginning of this of how you work as a talent.
Yep.
Nonetheless.
Be reliable.
How is that not... Agreed upon.
Because no one's taught, a lot of people haven't been taught that. I learned that the hard way because I was the jerk who went, no, I'm going to do my own thing. And then all of a sudden I wasn't getting booked. And then I went, I'll do what they tell me to do. And all of a sudden I'm booked everywhere.
But I would think that would be a given. Like, don't get me wrong. I met 1,000 goofs, mm-hmm. came and went
yep.
during my time because OVW was literally what I described. That's what I would create here.
Yes.
That system. That system attracted a lot of people for various reasons. Some loved the business. Some were delusional. Mm-hmm. Some were Goldberg fans.
Yeah.
Some were gas heads yes. who looked great in a t-shirt with cut-off sleeves. Some were, you know, crazy.
Yep.
Some were enormously talented people.
Mm-hmm.
You get a wild variety of them.
Absolutely.
So you got to go through that nonsense to a degree to find... The good ones. And
yeah.
And it's a part of the process. It's the journey.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. But...
So at the end of the day, like, I'm thankful for a lot of the goofs that I had to work with.
Mm.
Because I learned how to protect myself.
Yes.
So now, today, if I take a booking in XYZ, working against some guy who's had 20 matches and has had probably 20 trips to the gym in his life, I know I can go half an hour with him, control him, not get blown up... And it'll be safe, and they'll get their money's worth.
Yep.
But that was a skill refined over a long period of time of doing that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
That those people are a benefit to you in the long run, don't you agree?
I agree, but the issue is here is we don't work as much. That's what I'm trying. I worked, so I worked 7 times this month, right? People are working once every 2 months. And then expecting the same recognition or the same experience. Or like, oh, I worked this show. Okay, I've worked 3 shows since then. So...
But that's ludicrous. That's like going to the gym twice and wanting to be a bodybuilder.
But this is what's happening.
Well, that's unrealistic. Locally.
People are wrestling once and then I'm sore the next night and then wrestling them. And they're like, oh, I want to do a superplex to the outside. I'm like, mate, I just worked. And then I'm the lazy one or I'm the one who doesn't want to bump.
But it's 100% a function of how you were broken into the business.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yes.
Like, for instance, I'd feel comfortable in saying that Carlo's guys wouldn't give you that headache.
No, not at all. No.
Because they're broken in by a guy who breaks guys who in gets the right it. Way.
Yes.
So it's more of a function over the last 10 years of who was in those positions to break in guys. Were those people who were in those situations credible people? Did they have the information?
They were credible.
And the experience.
I just don't think they had the information. They were credible, but they were basing guys on working once a month or once a fortnight.
Yeah.
Instead of every night. Where Carlo trains his guys, you got to do that every night if you want to be a successful wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference. When older guys were trained, they'll train to go out there and be WrestleMania every night to the point, you know, almost hurt yourself. Like that,
that's crazy because then you won't work 4 days a week.
That's right. But guys, smart guys like Jag knew that he's going to have to do this every night if he wants this to be successful. Davis Storm in Perth, we're going to have to do this every night if we want this to be successful. So let's wrestle smart. And let's they did. Work. Yeah. And they did. And that's why their guys are overseas. That's why, you know, Shane and Mike are at WWE. That's why Cass and Jess are overseas. Because the people that trained them were like, this is every night. So work smart.
So it's literally a function of, you know, you have a puppy, let's say your average indie guy is a puppy.
Yep.
If you beat the shit out of that puppy, it's going to turn up to be a fucking... You give it a bunch of gas, it's going to turn into a mean-ass dog that you can probably put in dog-fighting things and make money.
Yes.
Contrast that with if you nurture and love that dog, it'll grow up and be a beautiful, loving animal that'll protect your family.
Yes.
Indie workers are like the same way. Absolutely. If how you come up and the experiences and exposures you have. So are there disreputable places or just places that were in the know that trained a vast majority of talent that you see today that would be the product of somebody that would say, well, I'm not going to put over Elliot Sexton. He's 6'5" and jacked. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
No,
my character would win.
Yeah. To be honest, no, because I don't know. Because I wasn't around those back in that day. So the early 2000s. So I don't know where a lot of people learnt their craft, but guys like Jay Andrews taught me, and that's how I was taught the every night type of thing. Guys like that have trained with Carla now, as I said, Jag, Davis Storm, Ryan Eagles, all those guys, wherever they picked it up from, have passed it on the right way. But there was a lot of little places as well. There's a lot of tiny little garage setups that were like, you just do your thing, you'll be fine.
Yeah, you have that.
Yeah. Just bump. You should know how to fall and how to do a suplex. And someone said something. It was actually Jag said it to me. He said, a lot of people do moves, but has anyone actually been taught how to do the move? People just go, I'm going to German you. Have you been taught how to do a German suplex? Well, no, I just do it. Hold on a second.
That's, yeah. That's when I'm not going to take it.
I didn't do German suplexes for a long time until recently, probably over the last 3 years. And the reason was, I went to Carlos one night and I said, can you teach me how to do a German suplex? Because no one had ever taught me. Because it wasn't my thing. I didn't want to do them. But then all of a sudden I want to add something to my repertoire. So I'm like, can you teach me? And he did. And I learned how to do a German suplex. A lot of people will be like, just do a clothesline. Well, tell me why I'm doing one and how I'm doing one.
Yeah.
Not just do it. Because anyone can put their hand out and you can bump them, but realistically, you know how to do a safe clothesline? Like,
but I think that, okay, so that's, I agree with you 100% in terms of the mechanics of physically doing it, but I would play devil's advocate and say that that's the easy part.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The hard part is knowing how to take that tool bag of whatever you do and whatever they do and creating something that satisfies the reason why the two of you were put together.
Yes.
Whether it be that the 10 of you needed to get on the House of Hardcore show because it was overpromised.
Yes.
Or whether it's you in a feud that's designed to ultimately sell tickets for the company.
Yes.
Like you versus Jonah Rock.
Yes.
So that's why we have to hit you with this baked bottle in the head today.
Yep. But I came up with that. So originally the idea, and the thing is, again, protecting your own brand as well as being an independent contractor. What happened is the promoter came up and said, we want to do a belt shot. And I said, I don't think belt shots are as legitimate as what they used to be, especially if I'm going to get color.
Mm.
So I'm like, let me think of something. So we came across something. We said a chair. We said a guard, like getting rammed into the guardrail. I'm like, I want something violent. I want something that people are going to go, holy shit. And then the bottle idea came up. And I'm like, how do you feel about a bottle? And it was ummed and ahed. And we were so concerned because they were so expensive to buy. We didn't have a prop one to test first, right? But I had seen them in action before from this guy. And I'm like, I trust what this guy makes 100%. When it happened, the noise and the visual and everything, people were like, he killed him. And the color I got off it too was massive. So it worked. Because we work together. Because I'm trying to create something that's going to A, put me and Jonah Rock over, and B, make this promotion sell tickets to the next show.
Because you bought into the promotion.
Yes.
Okay, so if you had the buy-in of the promotion, the facility, the experience in certain key positions to position you strategically to where when you got that opportunity in the future with a company that could actually pay you to do this full-time,
mm-hmm.
that you were over-prepared.
Mm.
No matter if they told you, we need you to go out there and put over this guy in 3 minutes, or we need you to go out there and put this dress on and act like
yep.
a queer.
Yep.
We need you to go out there and take a shit in a diaper.
Yes.
Whatever.
You have You're to be prepared.
Over-prepared yes. for every situation. That's the answer I'm going to give.
Yep.
And I think it's possible.
Absolutely. You have to be, if, as I said, you're an independent contractor. If the promoter comes up to you and says, your job tonight is to be a cross-dresser and you need to finish with a moonsault, you need to be able to go, yes, sir. And that person goes, God, that's so easy. Done.
But for me, okay, so if I'm in that promoter position and I go to you and I say, hey, I need you to wear this bunny outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And you give me shit about your merchandise sales. I'm going to say, okay, cool. And you're still going to wear the suit. But then I know in the future that I can't rely on you.
Yep.
So, because I'm not telling you to wear a bunny suit because I don't like you and I want to make you a fucking asshole.
Yep.
There's a reason behind yes, it.
Absolutely.
And whether it's to teach you a fucking lesson
mm-hmm.
about not relying on being a body guy, for instance.
Yep.
Or if it's to further some other angle, everybody views themselves as a puzzle piece and everybody thinks they're the center of the puzzle because mm-hmm. they're viewing it from their own perspective. When in reality, the only person's opinion who matters is the one who's building the piece themselves.
Yes.
So if today I ask you, I need you to do this in this manner and you can do it, guess what? Tomorrow when I need maybe a piece closer to the centerpiece or maybe a new centerpiece.
You're the piece. Absolutely.
You are in a much better spot to be in that piece.
Absolutely.
Unless you're related to somebody or you have two heads or, you know, there's something that is intangible about you that I can't easily replicate.
Yep.
Because I can fire you and hire the Turkish Delight tomorrow.
Exactly. But that's honest to God truth. And that was actually said recently. Someone once said...
Well, I don't agree with that, but...
Well, someone recently said, and it just got back to me, and that's cool. They said, why would we book Juicy when we can book Turkish Delight? And that's fine. You can try that. But you're going to get two very different things. I love Turkish Delight. I love Mehmet.
I don't know the guy.
Nice kid.
His shit pops me.
Yes, absolutely.
And I always thought of you.
Yes.
And then recently I saw the thing where you guys did something together and he called you dad and I was like, oh, this is awesome.
That's right.
It popped the shit out of me.
Yep. Now, I could have been a salty fuck and be like, oh, this kid's stealing my bookings. Or I can go do a promo with him where he calls me dad. And then people can book us together.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, here's the difference. I don't know the kid.
Mm.
His shit's entertaining.
Yes.
But you have how many years of experience on him?
11.
Okay, and you've been in situations before that are much higher than his comprehension of the business now, right? Yes. So, let's say our Turkish Delight happened to live in a different geographic area as you, which is the situation.
Yes.
He would pick up some things from working with you, especially in this tag team situation.
Yes.
So that at the end of the day, they're investing in you to get a higher return on their investment in
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely.
Long term.
And I wouldn't care if he did. If he overtook me in bookings because he was doing a different shtick, I'd be like, good, I've helped this young kid who loves wrestling just as much as I do achieve. He came up to me at the last IWA show that I worked and asked for some feedback. And I gave him some. And he actually then wrote to me a few days later with what he planned to do to fix those things I brought it up. Now, I didn't give him, like, oh, listen here, kid. I just pretty much spoke about his selling. His selling wasn't empathetic enough. Like, he would sell like a wrestler. I said, you need to sell for the crowd to feel sorry for you.
You gave him honest criticism as a fellow performer.
Absolutely.
With a lot more repetition.
And he understood what I meant because I explained it to him. I said, because if they feel sorry for you, when your fire happens, they go, yes, he's coming back on the bully because he's never going to be the big guy. Like, I never was a big guy. Even though I'm 130 kilos and 5'11" or 6' on the tape. Like, I always underplay myself. So when the fire happens and I'm coming back, people go, yes, Juicy, yes. And then I get my comeuppance and they're happy and they storm the ring like they did with JXT and I.
And you're in fifth gear at that
point. Yeah. For example, that thing that happened where the crowd stormed the ring with JXT and I, right? When we won the tag team belts. The reason that happened is, again, I spoke to the promoter about what happened. They wanted me and Ali and E-Man to have a match and then Ali and E-Man to walk out. And I said, why would we touch? Why not steal that match away from them from the very beginning? I want the crowd to be so angry that they almost are asking for their money back because they missed out on that match. Me and Jake's team sold it like we were going to win the belts that night.
It's risky for the promotion.
Absolutely, it is. And they said to me, if this doesn't work, you're fucked. And I said, let's take it away from them. I believe this is going to work. And it did. The crowd was so angry. It was so disgusting. They actually wrote to MCW on their Facebook saying, like, it was unfair they didn't get that match. And that's what I wanted, because when we won it, because what happened is, the way they did it is, Walker was being their manager, told them to walk out, which they did. The crowd lost it. So then when we pulled the Eddie Guerrero spot at the end with the fake chair shot, and it looked like Edwin was going to disqualify us and they were going to win, the crowd was standing up on their chairs, angry because they thought this was going to happen again. And when it did it, and we got the pinfall, magic, they stormed the ring.
Oh, I was there.
You get me? Like, it's just...
Yeah.
That's what you want. That's, you want that emotion. You want to take them on a ride. You want them to believe. That's what we're here for.
But after you take them to that ride, and after they've stormed the ring, why the fuck would you put over Elliot Sexton? You know what I mean?
But
I just can't get over that aspect. Look, to me, it's... I had, my journey involved putting over a lot of people because I've always been a heel.
Yeah.
Except at one point in my career where I was forced to be a babyface because they said you'll be a better heel in the end.
Yeah.
So it made sense to me and I did it. But for the most part, I don't understand how, it doesn't matter. If I was making a Hollywood movie, okay, and I'm starring Brad Pitt, Legends of the Fall 2, and I give you a role and I'm going to pay you $300,000 to be some bank robber who Brad Pitt beats up and shoots.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to tell me fucking no?
No.
My character would whip Brad Pitt's ass. Look at my fucking arm. Yeah. 24 inches.
Not a chance. Life,
you know what I mean? Wrestling's the same thing.
Exactly. Give me my money and I'm happily do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just, that type of philosophy blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came to this scene and I'm like, you know what? I know how I'll get over. I'll lose to everybody.
Yep.
It's not real.
No.
So why isn't it taught that way? In the end, you, if you are one of these garages, you're obviously going there to learn this skill or at least get experience in what you perceive this skill to be so that you can go do it for money, maybe, let's say.
Yes, but the thing is, before PWA and PCW are probably the first promotions to come in to start teaching things besides moves. Jay Andrews taught me that there was a thing called psychology. And I was like, what? What's this psychology shit? What are you talking about? Because in your head, as a fan, you don't see the psychology. You just see the moves. And you go, oh, I just need to do a whole bunch of cool moves.
Consciously.
Yes.
You don't see the psychology.
That's right. You're like, oh, I just need to do a bunch of cool moves and have a cool finisher and a cool name and I'll be over. And then you get into the business and you go, oh, holy shit, there's psychology. And that's what changed wrestling in like 2005, is guys like Jay Andrews stood up, guys like Jag, guys like Davis Storm stood up and went, no, 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 we actually have to have a reason why we're doing these moves. There has to be a reason why this character works. Because everyone wanted to be the shiny pants kick pad wrestler.
Where was their influence coming from?
That I don't know. I know...
That's the question.
Well, I know Davis Storm, Jag, and Mikey Nichols went to the New Japan Dojo in LA with Finn Balor and all that. So, that's where their stuff came from.
So they got a realistic understanding of how the business actually works.
Yes.
Imagine that.
Yep. You get me? And it's a shame, because sometimes I see new wrestlers come in, I'm like, oh, they don't get it. Like, they don't get what this is about.
But they have their role.
You hope they get it. You want them to get it. You don't want them to get them 5 to 10 years in and be like, mate. And they're like, oh, well, I've been doing this for 10 years the same way. What's the problem?
Well, then that's on them. Look, if I wanted to be a doctor, I would have to go to a school of medicine.
Yes.
In order to be a prerequisite to learn the business and the trade of being a doctor.
But the problem is, in the local scene here, people watch Home Improvement and think they're a builder.
Correct. However, you would still, I would think, a reasonable human being would seek feedback from your peers and from those that you admire. If you don't...
There's people that okay. don't.
I agree. I've seen it.
I've been doing this for 11 years and I still ask people that I wrestle, is anything that you think? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, this was a bit funny. I'm like, yeah, I felt that out there too. Like a discussion with another human about the craft that we do.
Yeah. Well, you're always going to have your guys that don't get it, aren't committed, don't know mentally, they're whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Their heads in their chicks, whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter. At all levels, you're going to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking guys getting paid in NXT.
Yep.
Same bullshit.
Yes.
So, for me, I just try to mentally identify who those people are. Like, oh, okay, you're a goof.
Mm.
And so that I know when I'm inevitably paired up with a goof. And when you do a 0-22 losing streak, you end up getting paired with those guys eventually.
Yep.
You know how to handle them. Because you've worked countless other goofs.
I think it's getting a little bit worse locally, especially in Melbourne, to tell you the truth.
But why?
People,
where's the sense of entitlement coming from?
People aren't going to good places like Carlo's and learning. This is the problem. They're going to places that are out in the middle of nowhere, like that nightcap.
Now, I was teaching classes there.
Yeah, but before you were, who was?
Okay, point taken.
And these same people come to shows and don't shake your hand. That is rule number one. Yeah. Doesn't matter where you are in the world. That is rule number one. Or shake your hand and introduce themselves with their wrestling names.
So the problem is literally free market enterprise.
Yes.
I could theoretically buy into a wrestling promotion with no experience and
yep.
it's my kitchen, so I'm the head chef.
Yes. You could go today and buy a ring on High Spots for 10 grand, get it delivered here and open Melbourne Wrestling Academy of Wrestling.
I think I'm going to do that.
But you get my point? That's the thing. Anyone can, and there's no regulation. And not that there should be, but because you know yourself, with regulation comes a lot of rules that are shit and people in authority who don't get wrestling. But what I'm saying is there's no big stick. There's no one going around going, no, you can't do that. I'm sorry.
But, okay, yeah, true. But in the long run, the market does correct itself. Like, for instance, let's say I was in the position to maybe influence certain people to get opportunities with certain companies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to stick my neck out for the retard that made a scene about putting over Elliot Sexton.
Mm.
Because, statistically speaking, I've seen that behavior. You'll go there, you'll replicate that behavior, and now I look like a fucking asshole.
But here's the problem. That person goes, fuck, I'm not booked on that show. I'm going to go make my own show. So they do. And then they get 50 people to a show and 50 people watch retards wrestle in the ring and with no fucking common sense or production value or anything, and then turn around and go, I'm never going to local wrestling again because that is fucking horrendous. So we lose 50 people who would have paid $25 happily to watch OCW or MCW or Warzone or Platinum or PCW.
But that's where your relevant marketing comes in.
I understand it. But the thing is, there's always going to be this guy who's like, I can't get on a show, so I will make my own, and I'll pay Platinum ring hire $500 or $1,000, whatever they charge, yeah, to hire a ring, because anyone can do it.
It's unfortunate, but at the same time, it's necessary, because I think you can find diamonds in the rough that if they're smart enough to ask questions, to take feedback, and to actually have a genuine passion for learning what to do and when and why to do it, and also things like shake a guy's hand, do business, so on and so forth, don't be a mark for yourself. As a whole, the industry raises.
But here's the problem. That's not my job. I'm not a promoter that I need to go find diamonds in the rough. What my job is...
Of course, if you were.
I want those 50 fans that went to a terrible show and got upset about it because it was shit to come to my show and be like, ah, local wrestling's awesome. I'm going to buy a t-shirt and tell my mates to come.
So why were they there in the first place?
Because they just wrestling.
They just created wrestling and a poster. They put it up.
Yes.
Somebody saw it and came.
Yes.
So do you not think that the damage that may have been done in that experience from your average consumer could be overcome by seeing something like what Newcastle does with the professional looking advertisement at the mall with insert body guy here and another body guy here.
But the problem is, what happens is, a friend of theirs sees that poster and goes, you need to come to Australian wrestling. It's awesome. I saw an ad for it. And they go, nah, I went to a show once. It was fucked.
They associate it all as the same.
It's all the same thing. To them, there's no, except for the hardcore fans, but there's no MCW, OCW, PCW, Warzone, Platinum. There's just local wrestling. for the casual fan.
As an outsider to the scene too, what I've noticed is that there's a high proportion of people that would go to an MCW show that would also go to an OCW show.
Absolutely.
You have a certain segment of that fan base that will buy tickets no matter what it is.
Yeah, but it's not high enough to survive though.
Correct. And they'll give a new product a chance. If it's shithouse, okay, back to the faithful.
Yes.
The MCWs and maybe the OCW, depending upon who they're bringing out this time.
Yep.
So, under those circumstances, you can't necessarily regulate Goofball.
No.
McGee or this guy running the show in his hometown or stuff like that. My contention would be that you could meet somebody out of that scene that could potentially learn the right way and be taught in.
Yeah.
But I recognize your concept of the damage is done because the people are exposed.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to do that. Unless you get government regulation in it. Believe me, you don't want that.
No. God,
yes.
No.
That would that's be a horrible. Nightmare. That happens.
Half the people wouldn't be wrestling.
And OVW has experienced that. Yeah. They've had government regulation and it's awful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Way more stringent than the wellness policy.
Yeah.
Ridiculous, too.
No, what we need is we need a big stick that's, you know, self-regulated. We need someone to be like, yeah, that's not fucking happening. We need someone to step in. And there isn't anyone. Because there's not. Because you know what will happen? That person will step up and they'll be like, I fucking hate that guy. That guy's a dickhead. And then all of a sudden, it's just the same shit.
Who gives a fuck? If you're in this situation to make money, and that's your outlook on this, and you can provide the platform and the connections in order to potentially get people opportunities that they may not be able to get on their own, that all of a sudden becomes the stick. So it becomes more desirable from the talent's perspective to work in that system, whatever that system is or however that system works. Yep. And then they become brand loyal to that system because they see it as a lifeline to opening bigger doors.
Yes.
It already happens with promotions in the city.
There's a lot of promotions I work for that exact reason.
Of course, as any independent contractor would. So it becomes the problem of being able to bring all that shit together at one time with that budget to be able to present that as a viable option for the talent and also being able to deliver a few guys too.
Yep.
Make sense?
Absolutely.
I think it can be achieved in 10 years' time.
I hope so.
I don't think it'll happen.
I'll be dead by then.
That's a great place to wrap
up. It is. I like it.
Hear Australia's favourite wrestlers. Here's where the action is. On Wrestle Radio Australia. Here's where the action is. Whether you're a fan or part of the industry, Wrestle Radio Australia is here for you with four packed shows. Drawing Heat with Beige and the Dude. Axe Cast with Josh the Axe Shooter. Healing Out with Muhammad Ali Vaez. And WRA with Todd Eastman and Josh Armour.
Elliot Sexton has dropped by. What size foot are you?
I think it's 15 US. So it's not like amazingly huge or anything, but it gets the job done, Josh. That's what matters.
That's what matters. That's it. That's all that matters.
You know, because of the sex, yeah.
It's all free. Subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, or hear us at WrestleRadioAustralia.com. Wrestle Radio Australia. It's where the action is.